it's Natalie and Miesha, and we're back with the Corporate Fringe.
Hi, episode 2, yay! Ooh,
which is about a ping pong table does not make someone an entrepreneur.
Really? Because every, you know, funky business, we go, oh, we've got a ping pong table. We're really, you know, we're innovative. Yay!
So this came about recently. I was at one of the large corporate firms in Victoria, and I was there and we met with the head of innovation, who was in...
Natalie just did inverted commas and it doesn't quite work. We're not quite used to the radio kind of style of talking.
But it helps me with my diction. So we went and we meet with the guy, of course it's a guy, who runs innovation, who wasn't in the corporate suit. No, he was in a very, very ironed pair of chinos with a polo shirt from a well-known brand.
He's relaxed.
He was out there relaxed.
Business casual.
Definitely ready to innovate. So we met with him and I was chatting to him about some certain things I was working on. And whilst we were chatting, he said, wonder what that guy's doing over there. And there was a guy sitting in the boardroom and he said, he's not supposed to be in there. He should be at his desk. With which I wanted to reply, maybe he's innovating. But no, they require innovation to happen in a particular space, a particular time, and innovation does not happen like that. And in fact, I did say to him, do you have a ping pong table? And he said, we do, but you're not allowed to use it during business hours. It's too noisy.
Oh, classic.
Yeah. So they've ticked the box. They're in their chinos, but it does not make an innovator. So we want to talk about what does make an entrepreneur and an innovator, because, I mean, we've only got our own observations. I've been in two startups now. One's been going for 10 years, which I'm really proud of, CPD Interactive.
Don't you love how she still calls it a startup? 10 years down the track.
I know. And now a more recent one that I'm working on at the moment, Vidversity. But we want to talk about how we've managed to start up businesses and what are the skills that really help you get there. And for me, the number one word that springs to mind is hustle.
It's a great word.
You really have to have pretty much check your shame aside and be able to hustle. And so Mieta's going to tell some stories that her husband, who's recently involved in a startup, is going to talk about those.
Yeah, now, and I started my own HR consulting business nearly 2 years ago. And, you know, that was been one of my experiences as well, is you don't have the business card with you with the brand on it anymore. You are starting from scratch and, you know, you've got to start somewhere. And so I've had that experience, but also my husband started a business 12 months ago and he's invented a product for the outdoor four-wheel drive market with a friend. And it's called Pressure Perfect. Check it out online. But he just recently went to a couple of the four-wheel drive shows. We live in Victoria. He needed to go to Sydney for the Sydney 4x4 show. And the following week, he was going to be in Canberra. So one of the things, you know, part of the you know, you've got to lower your standards is he took the camper trailer with him and did 3,500 kilometres between Victoria and New South Wales, went to the shows, stayed in the camping grounds. And, you know, that's what you've got to do for $40 a night accommodation. And one of the funniest things that happened while he was staying somewhere at a campground, we were at 6 o'clock at night having a very serious conversation over the phone. And then he went, whoa! And I said, what's that? And he goes, whale! So I think there's some nice side benefits of staying in the camping grounds along the way.
And I think without dropping names or trying to talk too much about business speak, the greatest hustler of all was Steve Jobs. I mean, when he launched the first Apple, I think it's the Apple Mac, he went to a massive conference at San Francisco. He only had, I think, 10 computers had been made, but he got 100 boxes built and designed and they looked amazing, which we all know that's what Apple, it's that tactile love being in their world, love opening the box. So he had 100 boxes stacked behind him, sold all of those computers, which were simply boxes. There was nothing inside. So I take that kind of stuff on board all the time because I'm trying to sell concepts or my new idea to big organizations who are nervous and slow to react. And you have to go out there and pretend that, or not pretend, because no. Your knowledge is real and your product is real. It's the confidence, but you have to sell the whole thing. Yeah. And I suppose the other thing, one of the big lessons I've learned in creating a product is And someone famously said, if you're not ashamed of your first version, then you went too late. Just press the button and go. You can spend your entire time saying, I've just got to perfect this, I'll perfect this. The problem is nobody's waiting for the product. So when you launch, the day you launch, nobody's there buying it unless you're Apple for the first after 10 years. So you have to remember, just get out there, listen, and learn.
But I think you and I have talked a lot about that sales is not a sexy word, you know, and a lot of people create products or invent something and say, we'll just get someone else to sell it. And the reality is somebody else, unless you're going to pay them an exorbitant amount of money, is not going to have that passion and that ability to hustle and to sell your product or your service like you do. And so, you know, it's interesting because sales is, I think it's not a sexy word at the moment, but that's what we're talking about. It's the hustle, it's the sales, it's the door knocking, it's the cold calling. It's whatever you need to do to get the attention you need with a very small budget.
Yeah, and often no budget, but that's the other thing you can't let people know. And that brings me to the next, I think, for me. So the two skills that I think are critical are hustle, and which doesn't always feel great. It's not always nice, but you have to do it. And the second one is problem solving. If you see problems as a dead end, you will not last in any kind of small or any kind of startup, because every single problem has to be solved by you and maybe your business partner, and that's it. You've got no money to buy in resources and no money. And for me, that's who I am. I love that every day. And that's why I can't stand the big corporate world. I dabble in it every few years. I go back and I think, no, I can do this. And then I sit in 20 meetings and think, we've created 30 more problems than we started with. So one thing that I started to do, I teach at a university, and me and the administration and bureaucracy in a university is a total clash.
It should be a sitcom.
It's a total clash of minds. I absolutely love to teach and I love my students. I cannot bear to go through a lot of, and it's rigor and I understand it needs to be there, but a lot of it just is devoid of common sense. So I do something very cheeky. I call everything that I run there a pilot. And so I've been running a program now. This is the 9th year of my pilot, and they keep saying, is the data there? I said, it's coming, because I just can't deal with the progress, the process of going through that whole thing. So that's not good on my behalf. I recognize that and I understand that. So that's why
self-awareness.
But that's why I go off and do these businesses, which I absolutely love and adore and thrive on. But that's the sort of thing that makes you. And I suppose when people say to me, why are you doing it again? Because I'm just starting a new business this year. And I say, because I can't not do it. When I find a concept or an idea and a problem I want to solve, I just love the journey of taking it from that to something hopefully successful. But often it's not, and you just pivot and go again. And I know pivot is such a Silicon Valley word. I don't like to talk like that. But it is really what you do. You hit a problem and you go, okay, I'm going to find another way to get there, because I actually can't not be this person.
Fail fast. Cool phrase at the moment, but it's true. And it's also comforting that, you know, the most successful entrepreneurs out there have had failures. And, you know, Natalie and I really feed off that, because it gives us great comfort. Not that we're not looking for great success, but, you know, the problem solvers, we're very much like that. We're, you know, two of three girls, and that's how we roll. You know, give us a problem and we'll work it through for you. But My little example of my entrepreneurial, innovative, creative thinking was I was super busy at work, and I was working with a client, but I also had another client I was facilitating a session with the next day. And, you know, husband away, kids at home, trying to fit everything in, and I had to read some articles in preparation for the facilitation. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get time to do this, but I realized I do spend a lot of time in the car. So I put it out there on Airtasker, who would like to read to me for an hour, and while I'm in the car, read the articles. And I got a lovely woman bid $30 or something, and I said, great, this is all within an hour. And I jumped in the car, and then for an hour she read to me. But I realized what I should have done is got her to record it, and then I could have actually shared it with the group. And since then, I've paid Natalie's daughter, who's 10, I paid her $5 for half an hour of reading in the car. So it's just working through your problems. There's so many cool solutions out there in the world right now. It's just a matter of finding them.
And I just got one story to finish on. I think it's a real demonstration of common sense gone mad and customer service gone mad. Last week I was at in Sydney again. As I've said in my past, I travel a lot. And I was in Sydney and I got off the plane and I arrived at my big hotel that has no soul. And I stood in line and there was about three people serving on reception and about 12 of us in line. I was about fifth or sixth. They served the first person, second person, third person. By which stage, when I got to the front, no one's left in reception but one woman. So I'm at the front, about to pack, grab my bag, move up, and she screams out, "Any members of Le Club?" Totally ignoring that I'm a customer, and it's about three people from behind go and push in front of me, each of them getting a special gift pack. I'm now next. I give her a big smile. "Any members of ACOR?" So everybody who's a member of ACOR goes past me. "Any frequent flyer members from Qantas?" By which stage now I've been 45 minutes in line, convinced I'm being videoed to see what my reaction is.
But you're not a loyal customer, Natalie.
No. And I literally could not check into the hotel. I could not get into my room. So eventually, after 45 minutes, I joined for free their ACOR club. She yells out again, "Anyone from ACOR?" I said, "I am." She says, "Come through. Sorry for the inconvenience." Checks me in and then says, "Sorry, we've run out of gift bags." Seriously, I'm the new customer that you're trying to impress. The others are loyal. Great, look after them. But I couldn't even get in my friggin' room. So
at the sacrifice of all other customers, our loyal ones are the most important.
Oh, not happy. So that's just an example of where I think things have gone mad. So thanks very much for tuning in and we look forward to hearing you next Friday at 11 o'clock.
Thanks. Thanks for joining us.